श्री रूप सनातन राहे राम की ग्राम प्रभुर मिलिय गेले अपना भवन. After meeting Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the village of Ramakeli, the brothers Rupa and Sanatan returned to their homes. The two brothers devised a means whereby they could give up their material activities. For this purpose, they appointed two Brahmins and paid them a large amount of money. The Brahmanas performed religious ceremonies and chanted the holy name of Krishna so that the two brothers might attain shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very soon. A Purascharan is a ritualistic ceremony performed under the guidance of an expert spiritual master or a Brahmana. It is performed for the fulfillment of desires. One rises early in the morning, chants the Hare Krishna mantra, performs Archana Veda, the arti ceremony, and worship the deities. These activities are described in the Madhya Lila 15th chapter, verse 108. Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis. At a young age, they were recruited by the Nawab Hussein Shah, who was the Muslim ruler of West Bengal. And he had basically told them as follows, that I've chosen you for government service and I want one of you to become my private secretary, W. Kaz, and the other one, he can deal with finance, and in this way I want you to assist me in ruling the kingdom. The brothers, they showed no interest. They did not want to take the service, but the Nawab used arguments that they found difficult to refuse. He said that if you don't take up this service, I will kill all the Brahmanas in West Bengal. So then Rupa and Sanatan decided to take up the government service. So we find described in the Bhakti Ratnakar. Anyway, it is said that they were devotees, actually. Prior to taking up government service, they were already devotees of Krishna. So when they took up government service, that was north from their residence. At that time, the government was, this is like in medieval Bengal, the government was situated in the northern district of Malda, which is nowadays takes about 8 hours by train from Mayapur to go to from Navadvip to go to Malda district. And then in that Malda district there was the Goda capital, as they called it at the time. Previously it had been known as Lucknow, the capital of King Lakshman Sen, who had ruled there, but now that the Nawab had taken over, it got the name of Goda. So, just in Goda, there was the palace of the Nawab. It was a Western construction, and we also find a mosque still there. And we also find the jail that was used for Sanatan Goswami still there. About 45 minutes outside of Goda is the village Ramakeli. Ramakeli is a village on the banks of the Ganga. And what the two brothers did is they tried to make that into a Gupta Vrindavan, a hidden Vrindavan. And they started to make different holy places there. Like they excavated some kunds, some ponds, and one was Radha Kund, another was Shama Kund. They had also a Lalita Kund, a Vishaka Kund. And in this way, various kunds were being made. So they also began to worship deities. And in the cottages, they built cottages along the Ganga. And they invited different
different scholarly brahmanas to come there and to discuss scripture with them. Originally, the family hailed from Karnataka in South India and were zamindars or landholders who had at the time come into conflict, in a family conflict. And the result was that they had to leave. This particular branch of the family had to leave because it was a serious conflict over land, and those things can go very heated in India. So one brother wanted all the land, and it was better to let him have it. It looked like that. So they went to the north, and a whole community of brahmanas came with them who were their dependents, and they settled first in Kannauj, near Kanpur today, in Uttar Pradesh, and later they were invited to Jessore, which was part of Bengal, now Bangladesh, but just across the border. So central Bengal, really. West Bengal is now in India, but the central portion of Bengal, Jessore, is where Rupa and Sanatan, where their father settled, and that is where they grew up. But there was a whole community of Karnataka Brahmins. So some of those Brahmanas also came to Ramakeri. And then many scholars of the time, they all visited Ramakeri, and they all became like, and they had discussions on scripture. So they discussed with the best scholars of their time. So one cannot imagine the learning that Rupa and Sanatan developed in these discussions. They refined so many points of philosophy. So they became very learned, and they were already learned before, but they became even more learned in that kind of association. So that was their private life. Otherwise, they would wear the aristocratic Muslim dress and would be carried in palanquins from their residence in Ramakeri to Goda to attend the court of the king. There were many, actually, Hindus in the court of the king. It was a Muslim practice in India to engage Hindu secretaries. They would generally, any Muslim ruler would keep a dabir khas, right, as a private secretary. So that became the name of Rupa Goswami. What's the other name? Malik. What was it?
Sakar Malik.
Sakar. Sakar. Thank you. Sakar Malik. Sanatan Goswami became Sakar Malik. So in this way they lived there in Ramakeri. Now we can see that at the time they were already great evolved devotees. They were worshipping Krishna. And there is further evidence to that, that one of the first books written by Rupa Goswami is known as the Hansa Dutta. The Hansa Dutta is a book which describes that it describes Vrindavan, and it describes how the residents of Vrindavan are living in great separation from Krishna after he has left. Srimati Radharani in particular is in a feverish state of separation. Therefore, the gopis have made a bed of cooling lotus flowers, which they keep wet so that she can cool down. And they fan her also with wet lotus flowers. So Lalita goes to the river with a pot to bring some more water and finds a swan there. And she immediately sees that this swan is the one. This swan has to be a messenger. And thus, she chooses the swan as a messenger. Now, a swan is not an ordinary bird. Swans are very noble birds. Swans, they eat the stems of lotuses. So they are pious by nature. So Lalita was looking at a candidate to engage in devotional service and saw good qualities in the candidate, saw piety in the candidate. Lalita, it is said, is older than Srimati Radharani, and therefore Lalita is sometimes acting as an instructor. She is like
being seniors, he instructs also Srimati Radharani. And in this way, Lalita represents Guru Tattva. And she is acting as the spiritual master with the swan, who is chosen as a messenger. But the swan is not sure that it is going to be a messenger. And it is also not clear, is the swan going to do it or not? That is not clear at all. The swan is simply sitting there, not moving. So, Lalita is trying different ways. Says, my dear swan, you know, just like you also are separated from your swan mate, you can appreciate, you know, the urgency of the situation. So what you do, you just follow Yamuna, you follow the path that Krishna went. And by following that path, you will attain everything. So this is very, very nice, because we can see the symbolic language there. If we follow the path that Krishna went, yeah, then indeed we will attain everything. Right? If we simply follow the pastimes of Krishna, and if we simply are deeply observing ourselves, absorbing ourselves in the pastimes and qualities of Krishna, we will become elevated. So in this way, she is instructing the swan of how to become elevated. But then she's not sure that this swan will actually go on the basis of spiritual instruction. Then she says, actually, you know, in Mathura, in Krishna's palace, right, on the roof terrace, there are several swans, life-size, made of crystal. Said, and when the swan carrier of Lord Brahma came to that place, he was totally astonished. So now the swan carrier of Brahma amongst swans is like the topmost swan, right? You can't get a higher position as a swan than being the carrier of Brahma, practically speaking, of course, unless you are Raja Hamsa in the Yamuna. But anyway, this swan was thinking, that's interesting. And life-size crystal swans. So in this way, Lalita was giving both spiritual incentives and material incentives. And in this way, the expert spiritual master is leading the candidate along the path to bring the candidate to the point of surrender. Whether the swan ever surrenders or not, that we will not know, because the book doesn't describe. Many verses are passing and the swan is still not leaving, and we're not sure if the swan will ever go. This is not surrender. Now, the interesting thing is then at the end of the story, Rupa Goswami says, I'm offering this book to my elder brother, who is my spiritual master, who is known as Sakar Malik. So that's very interesting, because now when we look at the description of the route that the swan is supposed to go, then we see that Rupa Goswami writes that on the way you will come through all the 12 forests of Vrindavan. However, if you go the path along the Yamuna, you won't go through all the 12 forests of Vrindavan. Geographically, it's not right. Later, Rupa Goswami wrote another book, which is Uddhava Sandesh, where Uddhava was sent as a messenger from Mathura to Vrindavan. In that book, the geography is completely correct. Then, if we consider that the book was offered to Sakar Malik, right, then it is understood that the book was completed before Rupa and Sanatan met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and before they were initiated. So in this way, this book is counted and dated as before meeting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And already, they were great, exalted, pure devotees, even then. Still, there was a difference. What was the difference was not just their dedication to Krishna, but the difference was when they were initiated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu,
They became instruments in the Sankirtan movement. They became instruments to push forward this Krishna consciousness everywhere. And that it was a huge difference, an enormous difference. And they became the principal followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he traveled through South India after taking sannyas. Before his sannyas, he was known as Nimai Pandit, a great scholar. But he was not known as a great devotee. Some knew him as a great devotee. Some even knew him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead at that time, as none different from Krishna himself. He had revealed himself to the devotees. It started that he went to Gaya. Gaya, the place where his spiritual master had given him initiation. When he came back, he had received the Gayatri Mantra. And he came back along the Ganga and came to the place Kanai Natashala, which is very close to Ramakiri. Very close, less than 20 kilometers. So he came to Kanai Natashala. And Natashala is a place where they would keep manuscripts and art. That is a Natashala. And Kanai is Krishna. So a place where manuscripts and art related to Krishna was being preserved. A library, in other words. Kanai Natashala. When he went to that place, he reached there at noon. And because it was noon, it was time to chant the newly received Gayatri Mantra that he had received during initiation. So when he sat down to chant the Gayatri Mantra, at that time he had a particular experience. There are different Gayatri Mantras, and one of them is known as the Gopal Gayatri. When he chanted the Gopal Gayatri, he saw Gopal. Gopal appeared before him. He had a darshan of Gopal. And then Gopal disappeared. So it was in Kanai Natashala that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became overwhelmed by separation after Krishna had disappeared. And he carried that mood of separation, constantly looking for Krishna. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? He carried that mood with him when he came to Bengal. And all the devotees were amazed. It said that in the house of Srivas there was a tree, and this tree would produce flowers even out of season. Somehow or other, this tree would always produce flowers when no other tree was producing flowers. So therefore, all the devotees who were doing puja in the morning would go there to collect their flowers. So as they came to that tree, then someone said, "Have you heard? What? Nimai Pandit has become a devotee." "No, come on. Nimai, yes. He went to Gaya, came back as a devotee, but not just as a devotee. He is an incredibly ecstatic devotee. We've never seen anyone cry so many tears." So it began like that. And everyone accepted. Nimai is a devotee now. Srinivas Thakur said, "Gutram Vardhanam Iti. Let our lineage, our gotra of Vaishnavas increase." So in this way, the devotees were welcoming Nimai, who had now become a devotee. But one day, Advaita Acharya was the first one to identify Nimai as an incarnation of the Lord. He said, one day he caught him when he came to his house, and he started to offer puja and so on and worship him. And said, "Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmanya Itaya Chalibati Taraya Krishnaya Govindaya Morma. Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmanya Itaya Chalibati." Remembering Krishna, the protector of the cows and the brahmanas. And in this way worshipping Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Later, in the house of Srivas, he was sitting on the altar and he revealed something to every devotee. And in this way established that he was the Supreme Lord. Like Advaita Acharya, he had been trying to explain the Bhagavad Gita in a Vaishnava context. called the Gitara Satyarapat, or the true explanation of the Gita, or Bhagavad Gita as it is. He had tried to explain it in that way, but he got stuck.
Oh, my neck is a little out. Is there a Bhagavad Gita?
Thank you. He got stuck in the 13th chapter. So the text reads, Sarvata pani padam tat sarvadu ksishiro mukam sarvata sutimalloke sarvam avritchatistati. Everywhere are his hands and legs, his eyes, heads and faces, and he has ears everywhere. In this way, he exists, pervading everything. So, Advaita Acharya was bewildered. He was thinking, this seems to refer to the impersonal feature of the Lord, the all-pervading feature of the Lord. But then it says that everywhere are his hands and legs. It's like his personal form. So how to understand this? Everywhere are his hands and legs, his eyes, heads and faces. And he has ears everywhere. In this way, the Lord is all-pervading. So, Advaita Acharya was really puzzled in trying to explain this verse. Then, at the time of sitting on the throne of Srivas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was now acting as the Supreme Lord, said to Advaita Acharya, Acharya, remember that you could not find the answer to this verse in the Gita. Where it said, everywhere are his hands, legs, his eyes, heads, and faces, and he has ears everywhere, and this way the Lord exists, pervading everything. Advaita Acharya, it is simple, actually. The real explanation is, everywhere are his hands and legs, his eyes, heads, and faces, and he has ears everywhere. In this way, the Supersoul exists, pervading everything. It deals with the Supersoul, this verse, 13, 14. Now, the text doesn't say Paramatma. It doesn't say it. No? You look, it doesn't say. It simply says he is all-pervading in this way. Everywhere, his hands, his faces, and so on. It doesn't say Paramatma or Supersoul. But the translation does in Prabhupada's Gita. And why does it say so? Because Lord Chaitanya told Advaita Acharya, subsequently, from that day on, the Acharyas have taken it. Baladeva Vijayabhusan takes it up in his commentaries as the Supersoul. And Prabhupada says in his translation, the Supersoul. So, interesting. So, this was proof that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Lord. There was a description of some householder who was one time traveling with his wife and young daughter. Young means just of young marriageable age, beautiful daughter. And in the night, they were traveling and they were followed by some Muslims. So he was getting very worried. Something might happen. So he was moving faster and faster, but he knew they are not far behind. So they came to a river. Now we are finished. You know, what will we do now? Then he prayed. And out of the darkness, out of nowhere, appeared a boatman. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to his devotees, remember that night? He said, oh, do I remember that night? He said, remember that a boatman came out of nowhere and saved you. He said, yes, I remember. Lord Chaitanya said, that boatman was I.
So in this way, he established that by knowing so many things that no one could know, he established that he was the Supreme Lord. Anyway, when Lord Chaitanya went through South India, after taking sannyas, for the first time, he openly showed love of God to everyone. And he started dancing in a kirtan, and he became very ecstatic, and people became all ecstatic. It's said that after that, Lord Chaitanya went to South India, and that in South India, he made many devotees, and he made people Vaishnavas. Of course, now we may not see so many followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the reason was because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at that time, he didn't have any books, he didn't have any temples, he didn't initiate anyone. So in this way, he didn't have a society, he didn't have anything to hold on to. But that was established by Rupa and Sanatan. These brothers, Rupa and Sanatan, later were sent to Vrindavan and they established everything. They established temples there. They found holy places in Vrindavan, so that created a place of pilgrimage. Temples, a place of pilgrimage, the place of Krishna. They discovered so many places. And they wrote books to establish the basic teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in writing. And they also initiated disciples. So in this way, everything became complete and the movement carried on and carried forward. So we're looking here at these two brothers who were engaged in the service of the Muslim government by force and who then freed themselves from that government service with difficulty, but eventually did it, and then went to Vrindavan upon the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And they were the perfect role models. Now the Chaitanya Charitamrita is explaining that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself who appears again. 5,000 years ago Krishna appeared, and Krishna did not appear alone. Krishna appeared with many associates. Now these same associates also come again with Krishna. Therefore we see the six Goswamis, headed up by Rupa and Sanatan, they are intimate associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or of Krishna, actually, eternal associates of Krishna. And we depend on them. If one wants to really practice this philosophy of Krishna consciousness and this process of Krishna consciousness, then we must follow this in the footsteps of these six Goswamis and the teachings of the six Goswamis, of Rupa and Sanatan in particular. So in this way, this is describing how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met these brothers and transformed them and engaged them. Transformed them in the sense that they were devotees, but it was private. They were from good families, Brahmin families, although they had become corrupted by government service. But they were still devotees of Krishna, even although they were in government service. So there were many devotees at the court of the Nawab Hussein Shah. Somehow or other, many devotees were engaged in government service, and some scholars, some academics who have studied Gaudiya Vaishnavism have said that they kept also many books in the libraries of the Nawab. So actually there was a secret Vaishnav mission around the Nawab that had many books in the libraries and so on. So in this way they had access to many, many scriptures. They would just put them in the library of the Nawab. So it was interesting how these things were going on. Anyway, the
Rupa and Sanatan gave us a process. And that process is very clearly defined. And it says, first of all, the opening of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami's main book, starts with the verse, Akila Rasamrita Murti. It is establishing Krishna as Akila Rasamrita Murti. Akila Rasamrita Murti means the perfect, complete form of the Lord who engages in unlimited relationships with all living beings. And each one has an individual relationship with that Lord eternally. A loving relationship, an expression of love. And that is the beginning. It said, in order to get to that, one has to reach a stage of being free from material desire. Otherwise, one cannot reach that love. So, Rupa Goswami says, Anya bilasita sunyam jnana karmaniyana avitam anikulyena krishnanu shiranam bhakti ruchina. That one must be free from all other desires. One must be no longer influenced by a desire to enjoy the material world or to escape from the material world. One must simply be ready to be the instrument of the Lord. And then one must, in this spirit, one must cultivate his love for the Lord. So it is said. The word cultivation is used. So then it continues, and the next verse that is significant is Klesagni Subhada. And it says that pure devotional service can destroy all suffering. All suffering will disappear. It says pure devotional service will make everything auspicious. Everything becomes auspicious. Whatever one does becomes now auspicious. It is said that it is moksha lagutta krit. It derides the happiness attained from liberation, from birth and death. Liberation from birth and death is good. Mukti, one becomes free from suffering in this world. But that's not enough. Because it's bhakti. It gives you not only freedom from suffering, but also the positive experience of love of God. It's not enough to say, how are you? Oh, I'm great. I don't have a toothache. Okay, that's okay. You're free from suffering. Very nice. That's nice that you don't have a toothache. That's good. I don't have a broken leg. Okay, very good. You know, but that's not enough. Yeah. If we would exchange like that, how are you? Oh, I'm good. I don't have a broken leg today. You know, I mean, that's strange. That's saying all the negative things that you don't have. That means mukti. I'm liberated now from suffering. No, but what about a positive experience? How are you? Oh, great, because it was someone's birthday and we had a big party and it was really good and there was cake, you know, like multi-layer cake with lots of cream at every layer in between. It was like 20 centimeters high, you know what I mean? Phew. It was something to try and bite through that cake. Okay, now you have a positive reason to be happy. Yeah? So it's not enough to just say, I don't have a broken leg to be happy. You must have some positive experience. That's the point. And that's why liberation will not do. We need actually positive service to the Lord. But not just service out of duty, but service out of love. You see, that is it. So, Klesagni, first one becomes free from all suffering. Okay, that's good, but that's not the ultimate goal. Subhada, but everything changes, it becomes auspicious. See, so far we do so many things that are not auspicious. We walk in the street and you step on so many ants. There's lots of ants here. You kill them, accidentally. Too bad, still there's karma.
Karma is there. Ooh, ooh. Now what? I didn't do it on purpose. Too bad. Still, you get karma. Oh, yes. So that is the nature. Therefore, inauspiciousness is unavoidable. Unavoidable. But when we engage in bhakti, it all becomes auspicious. In bhakti, yes, it becomes auspicious. I remember that I was in the outback of Australia driving on dirt roads on a farm, and there were too many rabbits, and they would always run under the car. Always. And it was always like one rabbit would go in front of the car, and you know the second rabbit would come under the car. Because there's couples, you know what I mean? They're partners. So you'd stop, and every time, it was too much. What to do? It was horrible. But what could you do? It just like, couldn't avoid it. But because when one is the instrument of the Lord, even when such things that are terrible, or not nice, are happening, one is not incurring karma. Because the Supreme Lord protects us, because we are His instrument. So, in this way, Subhadra, everything becomes auspicious. Moksala gutta krit. The happiness from devotional service is much greater than liberation, greater than being free from suffering. We get now the positive experience of a relationship with the greatest personality, the Supreme Lord. It is rarely attained, it is sudurlabha. And then, that love becomes thicker, more dense. The service becomes dense. Sandrananda visheshatma. First, we do a little service, take a break, do again a little service, take a break, do a little service. But eventually, we chant, you know, four rounds, and you think, okay, now we should maybe do something else for a moment, check the mail, eat something, or whatever. Then again, four rounds, little. But as devotional service begins to capture our heart, we become more absorbed, and every moment, avyakta kalatvam, every moment is used in the service of the Lord. Sandrananda viseshatma. It becomes more dense. This is advanced stage. This is the idea. And then, finally we come to the stage of pure, unalloyed love for Krishna. And that is, of course, the ultimate stage. And then, that love can attract Krishna. Krishna becomes attracted by our service. And that's ultimately the secret. The secret is to attract the Supreme Lord. Not just that we become attracted to the Supreme Lord, but that we can attract the Supreme Lord by our service, because it is a reciprocation, you see. Sometimes I walk on an airport, and it's like there are so many people from so many religious backgrounds. Sometimes it looks like a religious exhibition. There are Jews with the typical, either the little topi and the big hats and so on, and little locks and a cord. There are Muslims. There are Christian priests, sometimes in traditional outfits. There are some little nuns from Kerala on the way to Rome. And like this, there are all kinds of religions, and in the middle, I'm also there in bright orange, just to add to it, with some Tibetan Buddhists, maybe. Like this, it's a whole mix, or some Thai, whatever, Buddhist, there's something. It's a whole religious exhibition there on the airport. Now the question is, why are there so many religions in the world? Why? What's the answer to that? Why? The answer is because God is invisible. We don't know. We don't know what He looks like. Ultimately, He's invisible. But he's only invisible to conditioned souls.
Nampakasa sarvasya yoga maya samavita. When we are engaging in the immaterial activities, then Krishna covers himself, he hides himself, he has a behind a curtain of illusion, we cannot see him. So this is what we find in the world, people can't see. But if we are actually following a process of service to Krishna, and we become purified, then, and we serve Krishna with pure love, then we can attract Krishna. Then, when one can attract Krishna, then Krishna makes himself visible. You see? And then Krishna will interact with us. This is the secret, these are the secret teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. Rajaviyam Rajaguyam Pavitram Idam Uttamam. Found in the ninth chapter, the greatest secret. And these are the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as are explained by Rupa Goswami. So that's the key. It's not about liberation, about becoming free from suffering. That's not good enough.
Or have no toothache. Okay, that's good.
I mean, it's very good. You have a broken leg. That's also good. Don't have any pains actually, nothing. It's like I didn't lose any money today. You can go a whole list, right? And then you can still, and are you happy? I guess. I guess. I should be happy. I should be happy because all these good things are there, because nothing bad happened, I should be happy. No, that's not enough. If you have to answer to the question, are you happy with something, I guess, that's not good enough. It should just be like overwhelming happiness. It should just be, totally happy. You shouldn't even have to ask, and it should just be beaming, just ecstatic, beaming. That is what happens when we enter into that relationship with the Supreme Lord, a loving exchange. And that loving exchange expresses itself in devotional service. So currently we are serving in practice. We are serving without love, but we are doing the service anyway, and serving is like, we don't do it out of full love, but we do it a little bit out of love, because we do it voluntarily. We don't get a big salary for it. So it's voluntary. So in that way, some level of love is there, beginning of love. And that when that matures, then that service begins to capture Krishna more and more. And that is the interesting part. That's where we see how these acharyas were experiencing so many miracles. Many stories we find. The Bhakti Ratnakar is a book, is a history book about the time of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, such as Rupa and Sanatana. And in there we find interesting stories. Like, for example, it is said that Rupa Goswami was writing. He was writing different books about Radha and Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. So, one time Rupa Goswami is writing, and he's describing Srimati Radharani. And he just, as he gives the full description of Srimati Radharani, he writes that, and her hair was like a black snake. Then he asked Sanatan Goswami to read whatever he had written that day, and he was going for his noon bath. Right? So he went to take a bath. When he returned, meanwhile, while he was gone, Sanatan Goswami had been reading the manuscript. And when Sanatan Goswami came to that part about the black snake, he said, this is a bit much, I mean, here is Radharani, she is the topmost devotee of Krishna. There is no greater devotee of Krishna. And it's a bit disrespectful to write
to like that her hair is like a black snake. That's really like not you know, you could have thought of another poetic expression, right? Something a little sweeter than snake. And while he's thinking, he said, I will talk to him about it. Anyway, then as he's sitting down and chanting japa, he sees some girls playing, and suddenly he sees a snake on the back of one of the girls. He calls out, snake, snake, watch out. Looking everywhere, where's the snake? I have experience with that because I was just recently in South Africa and suddenly people start to call snake. And you know, I don't know where the snake is, right? Snake, snakes, I'm looking everywhere. And the snake was on a branch close to my head, but I was looking on the ground, where's the snake? So anyway, I said, thanks, next time, say next to your head, not just snake. Anyway, so the same thing happened when Sanatana Goswami called out, snake, snake, snake. Then the girls were looking everywhere, snake, where, snake, you know, where's the snake? And Sanatana Goswami said, there, on her back. And the girls started laughing and said, Baba, that is not a snake, that is her hair. And then the girls disappeared. And then Sanatana Goswami realized, my God, they came to show me that it's really like that. Then later when Rupa came back, and he asked, so, how did you like the writing? Oh, Rupa Goswami said, I liked it very much, especially that part about that black snake. And it's like very nice. So in this way, we see that they were very transcendental. They had direct experiences, right, of Radha and Krishna. It was not theoretical. It was just not philosophy from a book or stories. It was an experience of a transcendental reality because the veil was lifted. Love for Krishna is what lifts that veil, then one can actually perceive the Supreme Lord and his eternal associates, the whole spiritual realm, and so on. So that is very interesting, I think, if we understand Krishna consciousness in that way. So of course currently we cannot see, and then we have some patience. We just have to have some patience. Therefore it said Ustaha Nischaya Dayat. One must have enthusiasm, determination, and patience. One must have patience. See? But the idea to just be free from suffering and dissolve all suffering, that is spiritual perfection. No. Because then one is missing out on the higher taste, on the superior experience. And therefore, we worship a personal God. Right? Because in this world also, personality, that's the juice. Right? Sometimes I see a book written by a big professor and it's like a book and a half, you know? I mean, this fat, it's a big encyclopedia or something. And then you read the dedication and it says, to Emily, right? His wife, right? So he's dedicating this whole, and I'm going, did you really do that for Emily? she has to read that. Like, this fat, you know, huge big book for Emily, right? And you go, but why? Because that is his wife. He loves her. She has motivated him. She stood by his side. She said, you can do it. You know, I know you can. You have it in you. You know what I mean? She had faith in him, where others thought, I don't know if he'll ever pull it off. But because Emily stood at his side, right? Therefore, he did it. And now he dedicates it to Emily because she is the love of his life and vice versa. And so, this whole big book to Emily. Thanks. thanks, Phil. That was really kind of you. I'd rather have a new vacuum cleaner. Yeah, crazy, kind of check. You still have the receipt, you know? Exchange it. No, but you understand the point, though. So in this way, a devotee who just offers everything to Krishna, Krishna becomes purchased. And when Krishna becomes purchased, that's where spiritual life changes from just a technique, from just a process, from just a religion, from meditation, from tapas, from austerity, from that's where it changes into magic, where spiritual life becomes magic. That's the idea of Lord Chaitanya's movement. And that's the idea of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, to reveal that magic to us. Okay, with that I wanted to share a little bit of the Chaitanya Charitamrita with you. I shared some biographical pastimes about Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis to show that they were already extraordinary devotees from the very beginning, and I illustrated it. But then I also showed that something changed when they became an instrument of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when they began to take up his mission, and when they wrote the books which were meant to bring pure Krishna consciousness to the entire world, and where the teachings of this pure devotional service were written down. And now, you know, like, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he took sannyas and then left Bengal in 1510. At age 24, he left Bengal. And Navadvip, the place where he had lived, it just stopped. Then he went to Jagannath Puri, and he couldn't really go back to his own village, his own town. That wasn't appropriate in those days. That was strictly followed. So he sent Nityananda to Bengal. Nityananda started kirtan in Bengal. And that kirtan was so filled with ecstasy that many, many people became caught up in it and transformed. But they were lacking in philosophy, in proper philosophical understanding. So then, after the life of Lord Chaitanya Nityananda, it went back down over time. It went back down. But then a next generation came, Narottam and Srinivas and Shamananda, and they brought the books from Vrindavan to Bengal. And then they had many, many copies made of these books. Many copies. Many Brahmanas were engaged to make copies. Now, in the Royal Asiatic Society in Calcutta, they found thousands of manuscripts from this time, from the copies, from the books of the Goswamis. Because everyone was giving the books of the Goswamis, like Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, Upadesha Amrita, you know, these kind of books. The same books that we got now from Srila Prabhupada. The ones that we have on our shelves at home, you know, the books of Prabhupada. Right? They were the books that were given to the people of West Bengal. And it was then that Krishna consciousness really became established. So in this way also, we should realize what we have. We don't know what we've got, you know. And these books, like, yeah, Nectar of Devotion, you know, somewhere there. But that changed Bengal, and everyone suddenly understood what is the real idea of spiritual life. That it's not meant to be a spiritual duty, but that it is meant to be magic, a magic exchange. That it's not meant to be liberation from suffering, freedom from toothache or broken leg, but that it is meant to be an exchange between, a magic exchange of love, mutual love, between the Lord and his devotee. So keeping that in mind, that is what we discussed this evening. And if anyone has a question or comment, I'll try to answer.
In a few of your lectures, you talk about the experiencing some taste. And Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita, that we can remain fixed in consciousness upon experiencing a higher taste.
Yes.
But then again, you were saying how we should just keep on going and be patient, even if we're not experiencing that. But sometimes we think, like, when will I ever get it? And then that may make us feel a little bit despondent or a bit disheartened. I was wondering if you could comment on that.
Well, I think that the higher taste is there, you know, from the very first day, from the first moment, there's a higher taste. I just think is that we are not open to it, we're distracted from it, so we're not paying attention to it. Something like when we serve out a wonderful feast meal, you know, a wonderful feast in the evening, and everyone's sitting in rows, and we're serving with buckets, walking past the rows, and everyone's sitting waiting with the spade, with the plates. And there's one row, that row is the one that doesn't get attention. You know, when everyone else has all the, as the sabjis, this row has only rice. And, you know, I mean, we only got rice, you know. We didn't get any sabjis yet, you know. Where's the cheese sabji? No. And then finally, cheese sabji comes and you're missing out on the next preps. Right? So after a while, you just start munching what you have, but you're not there, you know, because you're all the time worried about what you're missing. The gulabs, you know, we didn't get any gulabs here. And you have eaten the whole feast and you didn't taste one bite. Because each time you were thinking of the preparation you were missing. So I just automatically ate it all. You never really tasted it. So like this, we are getting so much. There's so much taste. There's lots of taste. But we're missing it, you know, because we're just, our mind is somewhere else. We're not there. There's like taste in kirtan, there's taste in this philosophy, there's taste in dancing, there's taste in prasadam, there's lots of taste in many things. Ratiyatra, it's fun. I mean, you know, pulling this chariot and it's loaded with mercy. Even this whole dimension, in spiritual life, everything has a spiritual dimension. We eat delicious things, but it's not just delicious, it's been offered to Krishna also. So you're eating, it tastes fantastic, but that's not all. It also, because it's transcendental, purifies the heart. So this prasadam, at the same time, you get free from a whole bunch of karma, and you get elevated, and so on. So double benefit. And that's devotional service. There's always that spiritual dimension to it. That makes it exciting. Anything mundane, you know, it's like if you've been swimming in Vrindavan in holy waters, and someone says, shall we go to the pool? You're in Canberra, so shall we go to the pool? You go, pool, I don't know. Is there anything holy about it? Do you have a holy tank of water here? Not really. It's not the same, you know. So that spiritual dimension, that makes everything magic. And the more you become aware of that, the more you become addicted to it. And then there's a higher taste in that. And then you can't do without it. And with prasadam, it goes very quick, the addiction. Serious addiction, prasadam addiction. That's a big problem. Yeah, like I have experience. I once went, you know, when I was still married, and I went with my former wife to Italy, to Rome, We went to the temple, long way, paid a taxi, cost me a fortune, come to the temple, there's a sign on the door, said, this temple is closed, permanently closed. Come on, my God, what do we do now? You know, didn't count on that. Then said, well, looked in the BTG, you know, Back to Godhead magazine, the restaurant in the city, I said, go there. The taxi driver is saying, he was crying more than me, he said, look, I'm paying, you know. Okay, we go to the city, restaurant also closed. Then it got really bad, you know. So in the end, check into a hotel, you know, by then I was like a fortune I'd already spent, like, you know, on the taxi, the hotel, this, that, and then there was nothing to eat. So the wife was like in a state where it was definitely necessary to get something to eat. So I was trying, but there was nothing vegetarian. Finally, there was one shop, one restaurant that had some fruit in the window. So I said, I want that fruit. He said, no, it's for decoration. I said, no, it's not. No. You have to sell this to me, you know. Anyway, it cost an arm and a leg, but eventually, you know, I brought something back, you know. Otherwise, it would have been like, you know, the divorce might have cost more, you know. So, what to do? Save the day. And then after 2 days, you know, after 2 days, we met a devotee in the street. And he had a hotel also, around the corner, right? Not far from us, it's a devotee. They owned a hotel, a devotee family. So we come to the hotel, and they're like, you know, he takes us to his hotel, and he's got deities and everything, right? And the wife said, is there any prasad? And there was. And then it was just like, you know. I mean, it was good, you know. Italy, you know. Italian prasad after something. After a few days on fruits, phew, it was good. Yeah, prasad, so. So we become addicted very quickly. There is a higher taste. Yeah. Banging a drum. You know. See, you're old and grey now. Pretty much, you know. Crooked as anything. But still banging a drum. Like, because there's a taste. There's a taste. It's not just banging a drum, but for Krishna, you know. In a kirtan. It's addictive. Can't stop it. So who says there's no higher taste? Lots of them. Other question? Okay, we're done. Well, thank you all for coming. I told you a bit more than the Bhagavad Gita tonight. I told you something from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Some of you may not be familiar with it, but basically, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the Bengali devotees, accept that Krishna came again 500 years ago in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And many millions actually are Gaudiya Vaishnavas and accepting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Lord in Bengal, in Orissa, and nowadays all over the world. Okay, I don't know what time it is, but it's night time. So, thank you very much, and see you again. Hare Krishna.